Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's April 30th, 34 degrees and some snow showers. And stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Park City's interim superintendent of schools, David Gomez. Also, Summit County Democratic Party Chair Cheryl Butler will be in to talk about the outcomes of Saturday's state convention. Finally, I'll be talking with Park City figure skating coach Haley Smith and a couple of the younger skaters who are performing in their upcoming spring presentation of Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. KPCW News Time now, 8:13. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, with the departure of Superintendent of Park City Schools, Amber Conley, in June, the Park City Board of Education recently approved the appointment of David Gomez as interim superintendent. He was previously the principal at Parley's Park Elementary School. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm assuming you're not a candidate for the final superintendent's position, just willing to fill in at this point?
Just willing to fill in.
Yes.
Yep, on an interim basis.
Okay. How long of an appointment is it? Do you know?
I don't know at this point, but I'm looking at, getting direction from the board, and it might be 2-3 months, but they're moving on finding a superintendent this weekend on Saturday. The interviews will take place, and so once that gets in place, we'll be able to have a little better timeline.
Okay. So you don't return to Parley's until next school year? Is that...
Yeah, yes, that's correct.
All right, and then who's taking over for you then at school?
Yeah, just happy that we have people on board. Tracy Fike, who has been a teacher in this district, and last few years at our school, she received her admin degree, and you know us principals and administrators, we like to crop our own and start training people to fill our spots because we know that things happen, and she's just been a fantastic addition and been a seamless transition.
Yeah, good experience for her as well.
Great experience for her, yes.
Yeah, good. Well, Superintendent Conley had started conversations a few weeks ago about her transition. She said she felt it was in the best interest of the district to appoint an interim superintendent. So is she gone at this point? I mean, her contract actually goes through June 30th.
Well, she's transitioning. As you know, she has an appointment in Mesa, Arizona. But she's still willing and able to help me and the district as needed, whether that's a phone call, whether that's sharing information. You know, I have just in this last week and a half have been texting her on different kinds of issues, and she's been very helpful.
So will she be in the district office?
She's not in the district office at this time. I've moved in and am in that office, but can and will come back if needed at different meetings and different kind of informational type projects that we are working on that we need her expertise.
So for all intents and purposes, she's done?
Pretty much so, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Now, did you have to apply for this interim position, or was it, were you tapped for it?
No, no application. Just the board president came and asked if I would be willing to step up, and I appreciate the vote of confidence. That makes me feel really good as a principal and administrator in Park City School District. But, I've always been taught that when an opportunity like this comes up, you step up and you help the team and you do what's necessary. And that's what I did. And, a good experience for me and for everyone, really, to kind of see how we can take this movement and just keep it going for the next person that comes in.
All right. So you've been principal at Parley's for how long now?
Yeah, I was working on my sixth year there.
Okay. So for the next 6 weeks, at least while school winds down, what's your focus?
Yeah, I think the biggest focus is being there when decisions need to be made. Obviously, there are some decisions that can't be made at this time, but we can lay the path for a new superintendent to come in. That's one of the biggest things that I can be doing with the team that we have of administrators, who, by the way, are fantastic. Also, continuing to support that relationship with the Board of Education, being there for them. I mean, that's one of the superintendent's biggest job is to be that go-between the board and the system. And I hope that I can keep that going and just open up communications with the board and be there as a support for them.
So I'm guessing the biggest thing you've got to do is get a budget passed?
We do, and we're very close. That's the conversations we're going to have in these next few board meetings, and I'm confident we can get that passed, and then we can start moving as administrators on to hiring and the plans that we need to make for next year.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about the budget, but in terms of the staff contracts, the teachers and classified employees, are those good through this next school year? So nothing you have to worry about?
Right, correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And then what about a new high school principal? Where are we at with that?
So we did hire a new high school principal, and he accepted and is on board. He'll be reporting to duty, I believe, in the month of July. Very excited. I have to get up to speed on that as well, but the little that I've heard from people are very excited of his capabilities and what he's going to bring to the district.
Great. Let's see. Park City Board of Education meeting tomorrow at district offices starting at 9 a.m. in a special regular session. The top item, of course, the budget. So you're pretty familiar with what's being proposed?
Yeah, and I'm getting brought up to speed daily, which is great. It's a fast-paced world now that I'm in, but really no different than being a principal in an elementary school. I mean, you get fast-paced. So that is the biggest thing. There are a couple additions that we will be talking about adding to schools, but really pretty close to being done with the budget.
So you're familiar then with the budgeting process? Something you do for the school?
Not at this level or this extent. I mean, we put budgets together when we receive, money from the district as far as FTE, how many full-time employees we'll have, how many additional classified staff maybe we can hire. And so we're familiar with putting budgets like that together, but obviously this is on a larger scale.
Sure. You're leaving a lot of it to Todd Halber, the business administrator?
Yes, leaning a lot on Todd, who's a fantastic administrator. He's helped me out a ton over this last week and a half. And I, as a parent and a principal and now interim, feel very good that we have Todd Halber on board.
Has the board come closer to determining the exact amount of a tax increase? We have been told that to expect one.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'll have to get more information on that and get back to you.
Yeah. And then in terms of the truth and taxation hearings, that'll be required? Date set for that? Or
I don't know that either. I'm quickly trying to get up to date. But in a week and a half, there's only so much that can be done.
Sure. So, we'll look at, approving an interim budget, and then a final budget is approved once the hearing's been done?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then in terms of the new positions that the budget talks about, do we have to have that final approval? Or do we just go ahead and move forward towards hiring the new staff that'll be needed?
No, we have to have that final approval, yeah. And that's why we're, it is a rush. I mean, there are prime times to, but at this point we just move on and we get to a decision, get to a unanimous decision, and then we as building administrators and the district staff need to then kick it in high gear and get staffing on board.
Okay. What about the interventionist discussion? Is that going to be part of tomorrow's discussion?
It will. Yep. And I'm going to bring some information to the table for them that they've asked me to bring, just clarification and looking at how this position is going to be monitored and so that we can make sure that it's something that's useful for kids, right?
Yeah. Anything else that's still undecided, though, in terms of the budget?
No. Those are the big items.
Okay. Later on, a discussion with regard to safety implementation. As we've reported, there have been delays in the safety projects at all of the schools. The plan, I guess, is to have it done and ready for next fall then?
Yes. Yep. That's correct.
Is that doable?
I think it is doable. That's my number one priority right now. You asked me what are the things that I could do. Well, that is one of the number one pieces that we need to get in place. And right now I'm gathering information, as you know, working with contractors and putting out bids and things like that are on timelines. And so I'm going to give the board updates frequently as to where we are with given projects. The biggest thing is, getting things in place so that obviously over the summer when kids are not here, we can really ramp up the work that needs to be done.
So basically something's being done at all of the schools.
It is mostly in the elementaries right now, with the entryways, and then projects to be done at the other, that I'm aware of at this point, at the other schools as well.
Yeah. What's the fencing plan for Parley's?
Yeah, there is a plan, and I've seen the drawings of it, and now just trying to work with people to, you know, ordering those pieces. And so there is a plan, and it looks pretty good.
Okay. And what's that look like? Is that the chain link that we're...
You know, I don't know the details on what the fence actually looks like, but that's one of those things that I know those went out for bid just recently. And so looking at a construction team that's going to come in and do that just barely went out. And so I'm gathering information on that, and we'll have to get back to you.
Okay. And in terms of just any additional safety information and implementation plan, I mean, that'll be presented to the board? I mean, what is it?
Decision's
been made.
Yeah, decision's been made. So we're looking at, we had a consultant come in and looked at our entryways and found a few things that need to be changed. And so that's in the process of looking at what those changes are and how they can be made, as well as, you know, what is our check-in system going to look like. Those are probably the bigger pieces right now.
Yeah. Any idea how much we have spent so far?
I do not. Yeah. No, but I will get up to speed on that as well.
And also later on in the meeting, a request for an exception to a policy. This is from Park City High School music teachers Brett Hughes and Chris Taylor. What is it that they're asking for an exception to?
Yeah, policy 9045 allows students in grades 9 through 12 for international travel. And I think in June 2019, the band has been invited to participate in the 75th anniversary of D-Day in France. So the band directors are asking the board for an exception to allow 8th graders to go to France. And I think the students will be just 2 weeks shy of competing their 8th year, but will officially be 9th graders when they return from the trip. So
is there a recommendation on that, or is it just it's a board decision?
Yeah, I think it's a board decision. Yep.
Sounds like a pretty great opportunity.
It does, yeah.
Let's see. The board will also recognize May as Mental Health Awareness Month. Lots going on between Connect and the schools and the county health department. Anything in particular that you wanted to mention about that?
You know, not at this time. Just that's another thing that I need to get up to speed with. But I'm really glad to see the community coming together and the resources that we have here and working together as a team. That is fantastic. And obviously, we just need to keep that going and broaden it and see what other partners we can bring on board with that as well.
Okay. Finally, so are you going to be handling graduation, or does Ember Conley come back for that?
Good question. We're still working on that. So I'll have to get back with you as well.
Okay. David, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just appreciate the support. I've had lots of people who have come and said, thank you for doing this. I do miss my school. I mean, it is what we sign up for as principals, and just have a fantastic system. I'm getting used to getting to know people, and if there's anything I can do to help in this interim process, please let me know.
Okay. David Gomez, serving as interim superintendent of Park City Schools. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Utah's Democratic delegates met at their state convention on Saturday. One of those in attendance was the chair of Summit County's Democratic Party, Cheryl Butler. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what was your takeaway for Summit County voters after Saturday?
So it was a great convention. We had a large delegation from Summit County. Summit County is awarded proportionally a large number of delegates because we have a fairly high number of Democratic voters in the county. And so we had almost 100 delegates representing both Summit and Wasatch County. We sit together at the convention as sort of a block, and I think we have it's recognized that we have a pretty powerful voice there.
Great. Saturday's convention, not nearly as contentious and long as the Republican convention, but there was a little bit of infighting between moderates and more left-leaning progressive. One of the examples was the nomination of moderate Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams, and who took 71% of the delegates, yet competitors accusing him of not having Democratic values. Polling shows he's popular and within the margin of error against Republican incumbent Mia Love. So do you think Democrats even have a chance, though, in House District 4?
I think that a number of organizations, both here in Utah as well as nationally, have identified that particular district as being one that is winnable for Democrats. Ben McAdams is a terrific candidate. He's well known throughout Salt Lake and throughout that district. So I think he has a terrific chance. It was, you know, a little bit contentious. We did see more candidates in that race than almost any other. There was, I believe, five. And certainly because Ben has been in politics for such a long time and is so well known, he does tend to be portrayed as the establishment. Certainly the other four candidates running against him were running like most do in that kind of a situation. They're the scrappy challengers, you know, and it makes for a terrific debate. But in general, the one who's most well-known and most experienced tends to win those, and that's what we saw with Ben.
Yeah. We have talked with the primary out-leader, Greg Schultz. He says it's a rare opportunity that a Democrat will win, much less a progressive Democrat. And his message is that everyone should be voting in the Republican primary so that everyone can have a voice. So this would mean Democrats like you registering as a Republican so that you can have a say in that Republican primary. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm against it, and for a couple of reasons. I've certainly heard the strategy discussed by a number of well-meaning folks, and I understand where they're coming from. However, the first reason is simply that I have a lot of friends and family members, in fact, who are Republicans. They are good people who have watched their party lurch to the right over the last couple of decades. They're worried, and they know they have a problem. They need to fix it. They're going to be working hard in their primaries. And to be honest, the last thing they need or want is to have a bunch of Democrats coming over to register as Republicans to meddle in their election process. And the second reason, there's two reasons, really. The second reason is simply that we have really great primaries that and some amazing primary candidates. And we need all the Democrats in the Democratic Party to help us determine which is the best in those primary races of our own.
So you don't think that this whole primary out would be an opportunity to get more moderate people having a say in state politics, huh?
I think that Republicans are perfectly capable of fixing their own party and bringing it back towards the center on their own.
Yeah. Some of our listeners will be voting in the District 3 race. That's the Wasatch County voters. Registered as Republicans have the chance to vote for either former Provo Mayor John Curtis, who is certainly more moderate than his primary challenger, state lawmaker Chris Herod. The winner of that primary then goes on to face Democrat James Singer, who won the convention on Saturday. I guess the same question as I asked earlier. I mean, does he even have a chance in this race?
James is a terrific candidate. I can't wait to watch his candidacy unfold throughout the primary and beyond. He is he's being recognized nationally now because he is the first Native American to be elected as a candidate to a federal office in the state of Utah. It's very well educated, well spoken, hardworking family man who I think is going to run a terrific campaign, and I would love to see every Democrat in Wasatch County get behind James immediately and start helping him, because the way he will win is for everybody to get behind him now, hear what he has to say. I think they'll be really impressed, and he has a great chance this year.
Well, you're very optimistic, because I don't think other Democrats are quite that optimistic, and I think a lot of them just feel like maybe they should just, you know, get over it, that Utah will never be a viable two-party state. You don't feel that way, huh?
Absolutely not. And I don't think you get there. I think we start with the goal in mind now, which is to make a more balanced legislature in the state of Utah. We want to see More diversity in our legislature, a group of people that are more reflective of the overall population of the state. And you don't get there by sort of giving up at the very beginning. You get there by building up folks organizing, energizing the electorate around some terrific candidates. And I think we do have some terrific candidates this year. And you move forward from there to get some of them elected.
Let's look to House District 1. This involves Summit County voters. Currently, it's Republican Rob Bishop. I think 8 terms he's got under his belt.
Quite a few.
We've got primary in this case, though.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we have two terrific candidates. It'll be a great choice because they're very different. Two Democratic candidates, Lee Castillo, who, in fact, won at the convention on Saturday. However, he didn't win by the 60% required. So it will be a primary between Lee and his the other candidate, Kurt Weiland. Both of them are from the western side of Congressional District 1. And Kurt has got a lot of experience, a West Point professor and retired older gentleman. Lee is young, exuberant, passionate, and has is a social services worker with the state. And as you said, more on the, I would say, left progressive side. And it'll be a terrific opportunity to listen to them both really espouse different versions of Democratic values and ideals.
Yeah. Rob Bishop, pretty powerful. I mean, what's it take to unseat him, especially with a Democrat?
It takes people getting out to vote. And I think that's one of the things you're going to see is midterm elections are a time when a lot of voters stay home. There's no presidential candidate on the ballot. And so folks both in both parties tend to not go to the polls or not, in our case, mail in their ballots. So what you're going to see is all of the candidates working to get their messages out there and mostly around the idea of how important it is to vote. Lots and lots of opportunities to register new voters this year and to mobilize voters. If the Democrats vote, we'll win.
Well, and there's also the unconventional way to counter the Rob Bishop traction, and that would be for Democrats to drop out and put their support behind Eric Eliason from the United Utah Party to go head-to-head with Bishop. Some are saying that may be the only way to remove Bishop. What do you think about that?
I think that it's way too early in the campaign season to be making those kinds of calls. I think as we proceed through the summer, we'll get a much better feel for the different candidates and their positions on the issues. We have a lot of really educated voters who look very carefully at the issues and make their decisions after listening to the debates, listening to and talking to the individual candidates. So I think we'll get a much better feel of just who is and is not viable as we get closer to August and September.
Well, again, I mean, you're giving voters a lot of credit. Polls show that Bishop, though, isn't that popular, and he wins because he's got an R after his name and has a lot of funding that comes from mostly outside of the state of Utah. So I guess I would think that, you know, wouldn't the Democratic philosophy be better served by voting for a more moderate Republican like Eric Eliason? Eliason, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah, Eric's an interesting candidate. I'm glad he's there. I'm glad that we're seeing lots of alternate viewpoints and that it's not just Congressman Bishop alone on the ballot. But I don't think he's the answer. I believe that, in fact, we have Democratic candidates who, in fact, in this case, are extremely viable and well-positioned to take on Mr. Bishop. And win or lose, they're going to be out there talking about Democratic values, supporting Democratic values. And the more Democrats who stay with the party and vote for them, the more viable these races become in the future.
All right. Let's talk about Senator Kevin Van Tassel leaving District 26, sprawling district with very different issues, a three-way primary there with the Republicans. We've got here for the Democrats, Pat Vaughn from Wasatch County and Eileen Gallagher facing off in the primary. Tell us a little bit about those two.
So, yeah, that's exciting to see two women. We had a lot of women candidates in Summit and Wasatch County and throughout the state, and really pleased to see that this year. And in this case, Eileen Gallagher and Pat Vaughn had an extremely tight race at the convention. There was two votes separating them. And so and it was immediately sent to the primary for decision by the voters. We're it's going to be terrific. They're both great women who have Pat's a long-term professional living in Wasatch County. Dr. Eileen Gallagher is extremely well-loved pediatrician here in who's from here in Summit County, and both of them have excellent understanding of the issues facing working families here on the Wasatch Back. I'm really excited for them to come on your show and get, you know, have a chance to talk about where they stand on the various issues. And I think voters have a great choice there come June when they get to vote to determine who's going to be the one to represent the Democrats for Senate District 26.
Yeah, so again, do the Democrats, though, I mean, if Democrats, we say get out and vote, but mail their ballots back in. I mean, do you really have the numbers to win in this very gerrymandered district?
It is an interesting district. So we've got folks, it encompasses Park City all the way out through Duchesne, Daggett, and Uinta County. So it requires a lot of work on the part of the candidates to get out there and meet people. Both Pat and Eileen have been out in Vernal, talking with people in Vernal, getting to know the issues out there. But I think it's a myth that only the Republicans from the eastern side of that district can possibly win. Van Tassel was there for a long time, and so you tend to build a myth around a person. And certainly there's no guarantee that the Republican will be from that side of the district. There's a really good chance that we could have, you know, Parkites, you know, running against each other in November. Yeah, and so in that case, the numbers get very different.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting threesome there, just given, yeah, whether or not that vote gets split, whether somebody will drop out. They both say that they're in it for the long haul here. What kind of resources does the party have for the candidates? I mean, do you have, other than time and energy, do you have money?
So to be honest, I actually believe that the time and the energy are way more important than the money when it comes right down to it in local races in particular. I think it matters a whole lot more who shows up knocking at your door and talking to you in person than and who's talking to you, a real person, neighbor, your family members. People tend to vote based on, you know, who they know and locally. Now, so volunteers, time, energy is way more important. Having said that, we are well-funded in Summit County. We have quite a lot of resources at our disposal that to be shared with the candidates. And there are national resources as well at our disposal. The Democratic National Committee made a point of flying out to the convention this weekend just to show and demonstrate their support to Utah and to make it really clear that their philosophy of every zip code counts is real. And we were very pleased to have New York Assemblyman and Democratic National Committee Vice Chair there at the convention. Brilliant speaker, Michael Blake. And he stuck around not just to give the keynote address, but to visit every one of the caucus meetings. There were over 25 caucuses meeting this last weekend. He sat down and talked one-on-one with me personally for over 40 minutes just to talk about how much they care about Utah politics and about helping out in races like the ones here in rural Utah, outside of Salt Lake City even. So I was very impressed.
Yeah. Tim Quinn, House District, the State House District 54, including Heber City and Park City, will have Democratic challenger Megan Miller running against him. Now, this is interesting because Tim, we know, is well-funded. In fact, 4 years ago when he ran, Craig Powell just dropped out, knowing that he could not compete with Quinn financially, given that Quinn's got some very strong financial resources. So does Megan again have a chance here?
I think Megan is an amazing candidate. She is one of the one of the ones who stands up and starts speaking, and everybody listens because she is such a good example of a working mom, professional working at the People's Health Clinic. And she is one of many moms that were actually running as candidates this year at the convention. We had a number of husbands with toddlers watching their wives give speeches. It was really gratifying to see Megan and a number of other ladies stand up and support working families and the values around those. She has got tons of energy, enthusiasm, and the support of Democrats across the state. When Tim won, he won by only 600 or so votes. It was extremely close. That is one of the most winnable races in the state of Utah, and it's recognized as such.
That was when Rudy Kohler was winning?
Correct.
Running, yeah.
And Rudy's thrown his weight and his entire organization behind Megan. So I think we are only going to build from where we were 2 years ago.
And then finally, we've got also in the House District 53, Logan Wild, the Republican, and one challenger, Democratic challenger, Chris Neville.
That is correct. Chris and Brian King are the two other representatives who are running for office this year. In both their cases, they were running unopposed on the Democratic side, and so they were become candidates by endorsement at the convention. Chris Neville has an amazingly gerrymandered district that literally starts at the Idaho border and comes south through Rich and Morgan County, through Summit and across to Daggett and all the way to the Colorado border. So he's going to be putting a lot of miles on his car this year, meeting voters across that area.
Okay. So kind of getting into the season here, I mean, what's the Democratic, Summit County Democratic Party challenge strategy for this election?
So it's pretty straightforward. It started in January with recruiting candidates, and we actually recruited more candidates for our races than almost any other comparable area in the state. We are very pleased with the turnout of folks on the Democratic side to run for office this year, and we will be working hard to energize the Democratic voters that are here. We have quite a few, and getting them mobilized to vote. That is really it. Energizing, organizing, and mobilizing.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I would be remiss if I didn't mention IWillVote.org. It's just another opportunity run by the National Party to get your name out there and remind yourself to vote and to vote Democrat.
Okay, Cheryl, thanks for your time. Cheryl Butler is the chair of the Summit County Democratic Party. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:50 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. The Park City Figure Skating Club will be presenting its spring show later this week in the studio with details. I have one of the club's coaches, Haley Smith, along with two of the performers, Amelie Stein and Elsa Fudge. Good morning, girls.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So do you want to start, Haley, and just tell us when and where the show will be?
Yeah, so the show is this weekend, May 4th and 5th. Both shows are at 7 p.m. Tickets, you can get tickets online on our website, figureskatingclubofparkcity.org. And both shows start at 7 p.m.
Great. The cost then?
The cost varies. So we actually have kind of a tiered seating system this year. And so you can actually get reserved seats, which we haven't done in the past. So there's like a map on the website where you can look and see what kind of tickets you want to get. And they vary in cost from, I think, down to like $5 up to, I think, $20 might be the most expensive ticket.
Okay. Money just goes back into the club?
Yep. It goes right back to our club.
All right. How many folks do you have skating?
We have 66 performers in our show, and this year we have 5 boys, which is new for us. We don't get a lot of boys in our sport, so we're happy to have those guys.
Okay, and the performance is going to be Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes. So we're doing, it's a version of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. We're calling it Wonka on Ice. And it's going to be a great show. This year we're doing, it's more like a play. So actually all of the characters are on the ice for a majority of the time, which is new for us. Normally we just do a couple of group numbers, some solos, but this is definitely more integrated than we've ever done before.
All right. And Amelie and Elsa then, what's your role?
So
I play
the villain, and the villain isn't really in the movie, but he's in the book. So I play Slugworth, And so I get to whisper to all the children, and I love my part. Super fun.
Okay. And you do it all on ice, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, are you talking as well, or are you just skating to music?
I'm pretty much just skating to music because my whispering is kind of silent. But I do have a solo, and it's my first year having a solo, so I'm really excited.
Great. So what are some of the things that you've been working on then in terms of the skate part?
So my solo isn't very long, but I do have some jumps, and I do have a sidekick, and so we kind of whisper to all the kids, and we love our part because it's super fun.
Okay, and then Elsa, what about you? What are you doing?
I am Mrs. Gloop, Augustus Gloop's mom, and yeah, I get to go into the chocolate factory, which I'm really excited about.
Okay, so you guys have sets that are
designed? Yeah, we have some really great parent volunteers that have designed and built some awesome sets for us. It's a big main backdrop, and it's got two sides to it, so it's going to be pretty theatrical this year.
Yeah, it sounds like
it. Yeah.
And then what about you? I mean, you skate, or you got some tricks that you've been working on as well?
So I have a group. I have a family, so I have a trio, basically, and we do jumps and spins and skate around, yeah.
All right. So let's see, I mean, how many, so you got 66 performing, is that everybody in the club or just if they want to participate?
That's just if they want to participate. We do have a few people in the club who just couldn't make the practices work for their schedule and their other activities that they've got going. But it's about 60% of our club participating in the show, which is pretty good.
Yeah. So why do it this way? I mean, it just kind of breaks it out of the routine of regular practices?
Yeah, so we like the show because it gives the kids an opportunity to perform in kind of a no-stress environment. And a big part of figure skating is learning how to perform and project to the judges, and especially in competitions, too. So it gives them kind of a no-pressure, like there's no placement happening. But it's also another avenue for them to take their skating career. We have quite a few skaters who have gone on from our club to skate with Disney on Ice or other touring shows. So this is a really great other avenue if you're not interested in super competitive figure skating. If you want to be a show skater, this is a really good opportunity to kind of learn how that works. So, yeah.
So how's the club broken up? I mean, is it? It's probably done on skill as opposed to age.
Yeah. So we are all skill based instead of age based. So we have kids that are as young as 6 or 7 in our like middle group of ability level, and then I'd say Amelie and Elsa are approaching like our higher level skaters, and they're in 5th and 6th grade. So definitely all skill based, but it's going to be a great show.
Yeah. How many coaches do you have in the program?
We've got 11 coaches in our program, and we're all kind of pulling together this week to make the show happen. So,
yeah. Does it require additional practice time then at the arena?
Yeah. So we this week actually will be at the rink because it's show week. We'll be there pretty much every evening practicing, but they've had additional practices every Thursday for the last 2 weeks for 2 hours after school. And a lot of these kids, Amelie and Elsa, just came from practice this morning. So they usually start around 6 in the morning before school and then head off to school. So.
So you two must really love it to get up that early.
Yeah. I'm always known as a skater in my class, so.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And your parents pretty helpful to get up early with you.
Yes.
Yes, they have great parents. We have great parents in our club.
Okay. Again, the place to get tickets is where?
FigureSkatingClubOfParkCity.org. And there's a big button right on the front of that page for tickets.
Okay. Haley, Elsa, and Amelie, good luck, and thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:56.